With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
This week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast is sponsored by KMA Audio Machines, an effects pedal range sporting undoubtedly some of the best-looking graphics and best-sounding circuits out there. With a heart and soul well-rooted in the classic tones of yesteryear, but with a mind firmly fixated on the present and future needs of musicians, KMA are an extremely exciting new brand. Handmade from start to finish and with unwavering passion for perfection, each and every pedal is designed using a custom double-sided PCB, assembled, silkscreened, tested and numbered by hand in their own workshop, all of which guarantees high quality, while the use of a virtually indestructible powder-coated die-cast enclosure ensures maximum durability. KMA Audio Machines truly stand out as one of the most exciting new brands in the business, now available worldwide via Audio Distribution Group, or visit kma-machines.com for more details. And welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Jay Cross.
Hello, Joe.
Matthew Knight.
Hello, Joe.
And Marcus Packham.
Hello, Joe.
Yes, that's right. We're back again with another episode. I don't know if we're going to do questions this week, because I think even though there's only a tiny bit of news, there's quite a lot of other cool stuff for us to talk about, so we'll see how that goes.
Didn't we only answer like three questions on the question special last week?
Yes, we did. Well, maybe we'll answer some questions. We'll see how it goes. And if you want to ask us a question, listener, or
that we won't answer,
if you want to get involved in the discussion in any way, then you can by joining our Facebook group on facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum. Now, I better introduce our new patrons, people that have joined us over on patreon.com/guitar nerds. I'd like to say hello to Jonathan Jeffrey. I don't normally trust a person with two first names, but in this case, well done, Jonathan. You have signed up, so you're obviously good. And to Sean DeMary, who has upgraded. Welcome to a higher tier. And to Joe Hoppard as well, who's joined us at the top tier, the $10 tier. So look forward, Joe, to your name being sung out at the end of this episode.
Do you still do that?
Yeah. There's a new song. Well, it's the same song, but you know, it's
backwards.
You know, different names every week. I was just so happy with the song that I made, because it's got a chorus hook and everything.
Okay.
So it's like a proper song
going,
now.
Thank you for your money. You paid for loads of rubbish. Yes, you have.
Yeah, so it's something like that. It's eerily similar to the actual tune itself.
Good.
So well done. We should also talk about the fact that it's the last week to enter the Thorpe Effects giveaway that we're doing, because on next week's episode, we're going to be announcing the winner. So this is your last chance. We are giving away a Thorpe Effects heavy water dual high headroom boost pedal, which of course is highly regarded and highly ranked by all of the nerds.
in last year's Gear of the Year podcast series. Entry is open globally, and all you've got to do is visit the Guitar Nerds, any of our social channels, Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, find the entry post, and answer the question, what is one piece of merchandise available for purchase on the Thorpe FX website? To find the answer, you need to visit thorpefx.com.
Yes, yeah, Jay? It is open to everyone, but we would prefer that someone in the UK wins it because it's cheaper to post. So if yes. you are, if you do live in the yes. UK and you haven't entered yet, please do. Yes. Just, you know, because we don't want to be, we don't want someone in Australia to win this.
No, that'll no,
be,
we don't.
It's just, that's just ridiculous. No,
exactly.
So
nearly 50% of our audience is in the States.
Yeah.
As well,
if you people could just not enter, that'd be, I really appreciate yeah, that.
That would be for the best, I think.
Yeah,
the best
that's
for
it.
Everyone. But yeah, whew, there we go. So there's a competition. Yeah, there's more competitions. We've got like at least two more competitions lined up after this.
Once self-isolation is over, we've got the Joe Branton date night to auction off as well.
Oh yeah, exactly. That's a great giveaway. You can win dinner and a show.
You've got to pay for it though. What you're winning is an evening with Joe.
Yeah. We're giving
at your
away
expense.
Opportunities left, right, and centre.
You've got to buy all my drinks.
Yeah, that's
that
it.
Would be great. We
should. Oh, I thought you meant Joe off. Had to pay for it all.
Oh no!
I said
no,
Joe
no.
had to pay for it out of his own personal pocket.
Joe doesn't pay for anything out of his personal pocket.
No,
it's the
no,
guitar
no.
nerd's kitty pays for his lifestyle.
I surround myself by friends who are overachievers in order to sustain my sort of continued underachievement.
Yeah. That's the nicest compliment anyone's ever given us, Joe. Thanks.
That is all right. No problem. Anyway, let's talk about some guitar stuff. So today I got through the Ashdown Ant, which is their new pedal board amplifier, a 200-watt bass. It's kind of, it says power amp, but it actually, because it, you know, it doesn't have like an input gain or anything. It's just got, you know, a master volume. But it does have a 3-band EQ on it and a mid-shift as well. But super, that's kind of what a fantastic solution, a 200-watt, super, like, crystal clean, basic pedal board amp for bass players. I mean,
you could go into a cab from that.
That's right. It has a speak on out on the top of it.
Okay.
So you can just plug straight into it. Have that on your pedal board with like a preamp of choice. You know, and you can go straight into a cab. Boom. It's literally the opposite of the CTM 300 two-man lift amp head that I use at the moment. But
why can't they combine the two and make a two-man lift pedal board amplifier?
That's made out of dark matter.
That's a great idea. But also, you know, Ashdown haven't just released it for bass players. They've done a Newt as well, which is the same thing, 200 watts again, but revoiced for guitar. Because, of course, for bass, I think 200 watts... digital is right on the right on the cusp of giggable sort of thing. It's certainly very loud. I think it caters for it fine, but you know it's like that's the least amount of giggable wattage I think you can have. Whereas for guitar, the 200 watts is actually ample, and if anything for me, you know,
oh, it's still 200 watts.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh right! Wow. Okay.
So as a bass player, obviously, I'm very excited about the Ant. I think it's a fantastic product and a wonderful solution. I'm really looking forward to making a board that's like a board and my amp in one. That's really cool. But I think overall, the product I'm most excited about is the Newt, just because it's £299, and you're getting a basic EQ, 200 watt power amp. Think of all the great, you know, preamps that are out there in individual pedals, let alone things like the Helix and stuff like that. I think what an absolutely wicked product.
I think it's worth mentioning because I definitely don't think they've shouted about it enough. If you go to the Ashdown website and you go to pedals, there's actually a lot of stuff that I don't think we've really talked about, but they've got a whole range of new designed, I say guitar effects, I mean they work for guitar or bass, but triple shot drive, macchiato compressor, studio compressor, velvet compressor, dynamic filter. They've even got the phone box, which is a headphone out / DI box. I think that is for basses because that has got two speak on outs, but they've also got some valve driven DI pedals as well.
Yeah.
And the funk face.
The legendary funk face.
That's what I call Joe when I'm annoyed with him.
The legendary funk face. No.
You are, Joe, I just have to say now, in front of everyone listening, you are a legendary funk face.
I forgot about all those pedals. So that Macchiato is the Guy Pratt signature compressor.
Oh, and yes.
The three controls on it are dark, medium, and light, which is quite neat because it's... What is a Macchiato? Matt, you used to drink Macchiatos, didn't you?
Macchiato is, if I remember rightly, a very short espresso with a tiny bit of milk. Usually, the difference between coffees is just the amount of milk. And actually, the order that you pour the coffee and the hot water, because I didn't realise that... An Americano is hot water first, then the espresso.
Is it?
Yeah, I think so.
I thought it was the other way around.
Welcome to the Coffee Nerds podcast.
I mean, I don't think it is very nerdy at all.
No.
Well, I didn't realise this really basic coffee was made this way.
I just don't understand. To a Guitar Nerds podcast.
I don't understand why you're making
guitars now.
But yeah, some really cool stuff, and yeah, the new, certainly very exciting. We have coming up at some point. We're confirming dates at the moment, but we're going to be doing a giveaway for both an Ashdown Ant and an Ashdown Newt. So that's certainly very exciting for listeners around the globe. Very cool products.
The Newt. Just looking at this, do you need to have it plugged in to a speaker to use the headphone out?
That's a good question. No, I would imagine it works independently as a headphone amplifier.
Yeah, it'll work. Yeah. It'll just be that the power amp inside and it'll just divert it to either the headphones or the speaker out. I'd imagine you probably can't use both at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, cool.
Yeah,
cool. Interesting. Very cool. Good little solution.
Yeah. And talking about pedals, listen, you will have heard on the start of this podcast, if you're not listening to it on Patreon, that we're sponsored by KMA Pedals at the moment. And I've got a massive pedal board of all the KMA stuff. So I'm going to be kind of like working through it over the next few weeks and talking about all the different pedals that they do.
It's a brand that we don't... Well, haven't really talked about much. I think we've mainly talked about them if the odd news story comes up. But I always see them at shows, and I've sort of never really interacted with them as much as I think I should have. Because if you go on their website, they make some pretty crazy stuff, and their website's pretty cool. Whenever you hover over a pedal on the website, the LEDs light up. I thought that was quite cool. But they make some really bizarre stuff.
Yeah, it's like really interesting. German company. They also get quite creative with their LEDs. They work them into the design. I actually think the screen printing and the design and everything about these pedals is very high quality as well. There are things like there's a fuzz, the worm, and it has like six or eight LEDs. It only does on or off, but it has this sort of circle of LEDs that are the mouth of this big sort of dune-esque worm on the front cover.
It is the dune worm, I think, isn't it? It's cool.
Yeah, it's very cool. But yeah, they do some absolutely crazy stuff. So I was kind of, you know, just getting a rough feel for all the pedals, first of all. And the thing that I was immediately attracted to is the weirdest pedal on there, or at least I thought the weirdest pedal.
That's weird for you to be, you think the weird one's the best one.
Yeah. But it was actually also their newest pedal, the Cirrus, which is, as they call, a spatial temporal modifier.
I mean...
Yeah, exactly. Why not? It's essentially a delay and reverb, but... It does some really interesting things with that delay and reverb. For example, you can have it you can have that delay pitching, so you get like a ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. You know, sort of pitching to a you can get that sort of thing.
Puppy power.
Yeah, exactly.
That was a blast from the past.
Yeah, that was a blast from the past.
That's Scrappy Doo.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But coupled that kind of with this big washy reverb and this, because of the sensitivity controls, you get like a slow gear on top of that, as well as this, yeah, this washy reverb plus the octaving delays, all of that together. And it sounds like the sort of thing that I build out of four or five different reverbs and delays when I'm using a Helix, but all in this one pedal for like £150. Like, they're not even an especially premium priced brand, but yeah, as a first dip into them, I thought the Cirrus was absolutely fantastic, and I'm going to be kind of working my way through them over the coming weeks.
The one that I always see crop up is the Horizont, which is their interdimensional multispatial stereo phaser.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I think I've got I think I've got one of those from a different brand, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's real common. You know, it's their take on a classic.
Yeah. It's Tube Screamer, right?
That for some reason, the graphics on that, and I always see that pedal pop up, but it's a very nice pink and purple color. Stereo phaser.
It's got 10 micro switches on it, Matt.
That's right, yeah.
10 micro switches.
Not enough.
10 micro switches, 4 micro pots, 4 regular size pots, and then 2, well, an on-off switch and then a tap switch. That's a lot of controls on a pedal.
Yep.
It's a lot of controls on a phaser, mate.
Yeah.
You know, let alone anything else. Phase 90 just had one.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's effectively like 5 Phase 90s, just, you know, with all the extra controls in there. I think it looks great. I think all their stuff looks really good. And their website is very well laid out as well. Lots of fancy descriptions and stories about the sounds. Definitely a very, very cool brand. I didn't realise they've been going since 2013.
Not a long time. They're a relatively young brand in the scheme of things.
Yeah, I guess we've just not really spoke about them much, but they're definitely cropping up on a few more pedal boards I've seen recently.
Yeah, certainly. I'll probably talk about a different pedal each week, I think, because there's so many to get through, but I'm having a great time so far. It's loads of fun. And I guess moving on from that, talking about what I'm plugging them into, my goodness, the Katana 100 Mark II, I hooked it up to Tone Studio for the first time to open up the massive wealth of effects that you then have access to. I can't believe that you've done this, Matt.
It's
always a good way to start a sentence.
Yeah. I can't believe how much is available on the Katana Mark II. I know we've spoken about it before, but it's unbelievable because you essentially, you log into, listener, if you plug in your Katana Mark II to your computer and you open up Tone Central, it then allows you to, now I'm using this with a foot switch as well, so I've got GAFC, that's it.
Great football team. Love them. Golchester Athletic Football Club.
Golchester?
Yeah, Golchester. They score all the goals.
With their chest.
Yeah.
Oh, no. But yeah, the foot switch allows you to either control the individual kind of effects, the delay, the reverb, turn them on and off as conventional stomp boxes, or you can have them, you can use it as you would a switcher where you're switching between the 4 channels of the amp, and each one of those channels can be geared towards any of the amp models and have any of the effects on or off, which essentially gives you basically access to the MS3 entire through just the Katana. I couldn't believe the things that were on there. Things like the Wave Synth. You know, we're talking about a £300 amplifier. I had reverse delays. I had, tape delays, loads of different types of reverb. I've got access to the harmonizer, and because the Katana also has an expression out, which also does, the GAFC has its own expression out as well, I can allocate effects to that foot switch. I don't just have to use it as a wah or a volume. And then I can control, I can move pitch around, I can move delay speeds around. I can't.
It's all
believe.
For you, Joe. You know, yeah. when I was thinking about the future, and we were sounding the sample, and I was like, just make it, just think about Joe, just think yeah. about Bo Banton. What would Bo Banton do?
Well, it's, I'm going to be, oh, sorry, go on.
I was going to say, for his audience participation pedal, he needs the, he needs to have a wave synth controlled by a foot controller in his yeah. amplifier.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I need. But yeah, my plan was to start playing in a new project, playing guitar. Obviously, that's scuppered by everything that's going on at the moment. But that was kind of my reason behind getting a Mark II. And I was thinking, you know, I'll use it for, because I think the spring reverb on the Katana is excellent. And, you know, I really like the clean sound from that amp anyway. So I was figuring that's what I'll do, and I'll have a few select pedals. But I literally do not need to, despite having the amount of stuff that, you know, I've got access to, all the pedals and things that we have. There's nothing that I could possibly need to plug in that isn't available via the Tone Studio software. I don't know why people are still buying things.
All right, mate, don't put us out of business. We need people to carry on buying things so they can. We need people to carry on buying things so they can listen to our like ill-informed slapdash opinions about them.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. Oh, now I've got some other things I want to talk about, but I feel like I've been talking pretty non-stop. So Jay, why don't we talk about because there have been a lot of things that have been being made free and available for people who are quarantining, and something pretty cool's come up.
Yeah, so Fender Play, which is the free to like the internet based guitar learning software that Fender launched, I don't know, a year or so ago.
Oh,
maybe
longer than that.
2 years ago. I can't really remember what it was. but with everything that's going on, Fender basically said, okay, look, I think it was at the start of last week, just said, first 100,000 people that want to do this will give you 3 months free. And it just happened immediately. So it's been pushed over to the first 500,000 people, I think that's what I read. Yeah, they're basically, if you want, there's like loads of lessons on there for beginners or for you know, good players, and also people who aren't beginners but also aren't good players, people like me. There's loads of stuff on there, and it's really good. And yeah, basically you get 3 months for free at the moment. And yeah, I just, it's mad. I think it's really cool. It's cool that there are so many people who, I don't know whether they're people that are kind of new to playing guitar. I suspect it's a bit of new guitar players, but I would expect a lot of it are people like us who are thinking, okay, well, I'm probably gonna have a bit of time on my hands now. Maybe I'll just learn how to play guitar properly as opposed to just playing these few chords that I know, which is, you know, it can only be a good thing for what we're doing in terms of, because all we want to do is talk to people about guitars and guitar stuff, really. That's all we do the rest of the week is text each other about that. So I think it's really cool. I think it's really exciting, and it's cool to see what goes on with it. You know, I'm seeing people from well outside of our kind of sphere of influence, but you know, well outside of our kind of like regular guitar friends who are talking about this, and it's it's really cool, really exciting. So you know, I'd check it out if you get a chance.
Yeah, I guess that because Fender are so massive, they're so sort of well known, so they're the right brand to be offering this sort of thing, and people who aren't already in the know are being able to find it and actually utilize it.
Yeah, totally. And I think the fact that it's such, that Fender's such a big name has helped by, you know, it's been picked up by a lot of the major American news like broadsheets and stuff. So I think that's a really good thing.
Oh, that's cool.
So yeah, you know, if it gets more people playing guitar, that's all we really care about. And you know, maybe in 5 years' time, they'll be listening to Guitar Nerds.
It's probably worth as well, like if you're, you know, if you work for someone who produces like plugins, or you know, you've got like IRs or anything like that that are free during this time while everyone's indoors, drop us a line and I'd imagine we'll give you a shout out as well, because like everyone loves free stuff. And
exactly,
you know, if we can point people towards it, that helps you and it helps them as well because they get free things.
You bought a load of stuff this week, didn't you, Joe?
I did, yeah. In fact, well, today, the day that we're recording this, I shared in the group earlier, but Black Rooster Audio, who are a plugin company, a German plugin company, who I'm very fond of, they released a bundle that they're actually calling the Stay at Home Bundle, which would normally be, it's basically almost all of their, or a decent cross section of their compressors, their EQs, their tape simulator, and then a few other mastering tools and some amp models and things like that. But basically, it's $950 worth of plugins that they're doing for $95. And then out of that $95, they're donating 10% of every sale to the Who COVID-19 response fund.
Mate, I reckon the Who have probably got enough money. They've done all those big albums, you know, they've done like Tommy and like Quadrophenia and that. I reckon they're all right for money. I don't think they need the donations.
No. Yeah, there you go. Yeah. But yeah, they're really good company. I mean, I use their Magnetite, which is it's like a tape deck simulator. So I can just run everything through it afterwards. I use it as a mastering tool to make everything sound a bit vintage.
And Joe, come on, we've got a term for that. What are you got to stay on brand.
What did I say? It's a make gooder.
Thank you.
It's a vintage make gooder, but I think that's
a vintage make gooder modern plugin.
Yes,
it's a make gooder, but it's a make gooder that goes on the other end of the chain rather than at the front.
Exactly that. But I bought that about a year ago for $90 or something like that, which that plugin is individually, and you now get that with about 20 other things for 95 quid. There are so many great plugin deals at the moment. So yeah, it's definitely worth hunting around for stuff. Speaking of hunting around, I got a new bass.
Of course you did.
Again,
is this the Epiphone or is this another new one?
No,
another one.
Yeah.
What? What did you? I assumed you were talking about the SG.
Yeah, I did. I got
Joe, we
Gibson
need to talk about your wages.
Yeah. I got a Gibson SG bass, a 2003.
Oh, okay. It is this. Sorry. I thought it was something else as well.
Last week I got the Epiphone EB1. This week I got the Gibson SG bass.
New bass every week, unbelievable.
So yeah, I popped a set of new tone strings on there, like 60 to 115, so I could get a short scale down to D standard. But it's absolutely fantastic. I only want Gibson stuff, which kind of brings me on to the fact that I'm selling my Baha. It's going up on Reverb this week, but I want a Melody Maker, but I need your guys' help. I could get the Gibson Melody Maker reissue from a few years ago, right? Because they go for about £500. Or I could get, the Epiphone Les Paul Special, the new one, but I'm not a massive fan of the yellow. Or there's the Epiphone SG Standard, the 61 Maestro Vibrola model as well.
So I tell you what, there is actually a guitar that I'm just trying to find some while you're talking about. I was trying to Google it and I can't remember what year it is, but there is a Melody Maker that is really, really nice. It's like mid 90s. I want to say like 95. I've only ever seen them in red, like a kind of hot rod red color, like, you know, post box red sort of thing. And they've got humbucker in the bridge and no other pickups and just a volume and tone mounted on the scratch plate. And they're supposed to be really, really good. And you can get them for not a lot of money. You can get them for sort of £400 or £500.
I've seen one of those, actually. I've seen one of those recently.
Yeah, they tend to be like quite difficult to get hold of. Like, they don't think they made that many. I'm trying to find some details now. I'm sure it's like 1995, I want to say, is the year.
Okay, maybe. I mean, I saw that. I didn't like that it was plateless. Like, it was maybe a bit modern looking for me.
No, they've got a scratch plate on there.
Oh, do they? Oh, maybe they've got a scratch plate. I'm thinking of then.
Yeah, they've got a scratch plate on there. I think they were made as like a cheap option. And actually, I've just seen that there is a 2 humbucker version available as well, which is in the same series. I don't have the year. It's like mid-90s ish. And yeah, it looks like there's a 1 pickup version or 2 pickup version, both humbuckers. And yeah, they've got a scratch plate. But I think it was a cheap option because all the controls and the jack plate and everything were on the scratch plate.
Right, so
I think it was just like something they probably just turned out in the 90s. It doesn't seem like there was a lot of love for that sort of guitar in the 90s. Like, I think the first ones that sort of came back were like the ones that I've got, you know, 2002 roughly. That's when they started coming back out again, and you started seeing runs of like the one that I've got, which is a gloss one with a single pickup, but they also did specials as well. And then they did things like they did 2 humbucker ones. I know Blake from Tone Mob has got one of those, which is like a satin finish 2 humbucker, totally flat top. I think they called it Les Paul. It wasn't a junior or a special. I can't remember what it was called. But yeah, it seems in the 90s, that sort of thing didn't really exist. You know, Melody Makers or juniors or specials. And these are just some weird anomaly that you occasionally see. I'm really trying to find the year. It's really annoying. I can't find it. Let me do a bit more digging. Keep talking.
Okay. What do you think then guys who aren't Mark?
SG Special faded.
You think... No. Okay, so...
Best guitar ever.
Yeah, it is good. And also, if you're just looking for an affordable Gibson, other than Melody Makers, the SG Faded Special does tend to be the cheapest Gibson that you can buy, which is incredible because it's also, certainly by all of us, it's revered as being, you know, a very, very good one and certainly a wonderful workhorse. But again, it's just too a bit modern for me.
Introducing the all-new Primo Mega and Mammoth Slinkies from Ernie Ball. Made from the same materials as their most popular strings, now available in gauges designed for today's players. Primo Slinky and Mega Slinky sets feature half-gauge strings, with Primo ranging from 9.5 to 44 and Mega running from 10.5 to 48. Designed for drop tunings, the Mammoth strings boast a gauge range of 12 to 62 and are now the heaviest Slinky strings available. Learn more about Primo Mega and Mammoth Slinkies by visiting ErnieBall.com or your favourite guitar retailer. Get yours today. Guitar Nerds is brought to you in association with Faith Guitars. Based right here in the UK, Faith Guitars are designed by British guitar luthier Patrick James Eggle, who has been hand-building guitars for decades for some of the biggest names in the business. Founded in 2002, Faith Guitars have been voted the UK's best acoustic guitars 5 times in a row by both the public and panels of music industry experts, so you can be confident in your new Faith guitar. Like all quality acoustics, Faith guitars are made of all solid tone wood, so you can be sure they'll start off sounding great and improve year on year. Faith don't use laminated woods, but you'll be pleased to know that despite the all solid tone woods, the superb specification and handmade construction, Faith guitars are still affordable, with prices starting at around £450 or $600. Discover the range at faithguitars.com and then visit one of the many UK or European retailers to try them for yourself. But hold up! If you're in the USA or Canada, you can buy direct at faithguitarsusa.com, and by using the coupon code NERDS at the checkout, you can get an exclusive 10% discount. So, in the UK and Europe, check out the guitars at your local dealer or faithguitars.com, but for North American listeners, buy direct at faithguitarsusa.com and use the coupon code NERDS for a special 10% off at the checkout. That's USA coupon code NERDS at the checkout. Faith Guitars, award-winning acoustics, designed right here in the UK.
Do what I do and go to eBay, search Gibson, and then just go price lowest to highest.
That's exactly what I do.
And then try and buy the cheapest thing possible.
Well, this is what I think about melody makers. So no one thinks I should be looking at the new Epiphone line.
They look fine, but I think, you know, if you want to spend £400-500, you know, you could get, I would say, at the one that's most available, but I think is probably not the best option, is that reissue Melody Maker, which has got the two like strat pickups in it, or what, the single strat pickup in some cases.
Yeah, it's just one.
You think that's
the
best one?
No. I think that's the cheapest one you could get, and I think it's probably not the best. But at the top end, you know, you could look for, you know, like one of these weird reissues, which has got the humbucker. They're really good because they're gloss finish. They've got the proper neck join. I'm looking at it, it's 1997, and prices, yeah, are like £400-500. And I think, you know, if you buy secondhand on one of those, you're getting a guitar that is going to be, you know, feels like a proper American-made Gibson, because that's what it is.
Yeah. What was your reservation, Mark and Jay, about the reissued Melody Maker?
What, the Gibson one?
Yeah.
They were just a very, very affordable guitar. You know, they were made certainly to a price point, because they were like $399 or something, Jay.
They were really cheap. And I think the issue that I had with them was they were cheap at a time when kind of there wasn't a huge amount of competition around premium branded cheap guitars. And like, basically, it was, I feel similar to those as I did to like the Mexican standard Strats and Tellies at the time, when it was very much a case of someone come in and be like, look, I've got £400 to spend on, I want to get this Les Paul, I want to get this Melody Maker Les Paul. And I'd basically always push people down to the Epiphone, because I thought that they were a better guitar for the money, in the same way as I would with a Mexican Strat in comparison to a classic Vibe Strat. You know, I think that the difference between what was available at a slightly lower price point at the time was just, the gulf was massive. Right. And I don't think that's the case now. I think what's the modern day equivalent of a Melody Maker now? The N25 or something? They're called?
I guess the most applicable thing would be that double cut junior that's, you know,
that they're doing
£600-700 or something.
Yeah, it's about £700, and that's got all the controls mounted through the plate on the front.
There is another Melody Maker that you could look at, which is the thin body, and it was like a weird midpoint. I'd have to find the year, but it was like a weird midpoint. Before they did those reissues, they did the thin body, so like a traditional Melody Maker, in the satin finishes, like those reissues, but with like a proper stop tail and with a single P90 in the bridge. So
they weren't Melody Maker headstocks, were they? They had like the wings.
No, I don't know. I need to look. Give us a Melody Maker.
Yeah, I think they had P90.
Let me just have a quick look. I think they were a Melody Maker headstock, which is fine by me. I don't mind the Melody Maker headstock at all. And if that's specifically the sort of thing that you're going for,
I actually love that headstock. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. They look fine. I can't find any. It just says pre-2014 is where on these pictures that I'm looking at.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
So, yeah, I mean, that would be another option as well. I think that's better than the ones with the Strat single coils. My main problem with those reissues with the Strat pickups is that, like, the pickups just don't sound that great.
Right. Okay.
And for a guitar that's got a fairly thin mahogany body, putting Strat pickups in, they just sound a bit like a bit too kind of wiry. Whereas if you go for something like these, which have got the humbucker, we've got the P90, or you go for that 90s reissue, which has got the humbucker in it, you're getting a much fuller sound, I would say.
Yeah, I guess so. Okay, I'm going to have to give it some more thought, because I certainly think like the Melody Maker is the coolest option, and I'd kind of almost be willing to, you know, maybe get a better pickup for it or something like that just to have one. But
that's the other option. If you go for one of the ones with the Strat single coils, you know, you could chop into it and do whatever you want with it. But I mean, I think you might as well go straight to the source and get one of the ones that's got a P90 already.
Yeah.
And in fact, I'm just having a look. People have done some like mods on them where they've added a scratch plate and stuff, so it looks more like a Junior. And they look fantastic, really good. And I bet you could get one of those for, yeah, maybe £400.
Yeah.
The good thing about the SG special, and I'm jumping around a bit here, but the SG special fadeds that Matt was talking about, you can get them for £400 and even below sometimes these days. So, like, they're such a bargain. And if you want a kind of thinner body, like Gibson guitar that isn't going to cost you a whole lot of money and has got that faded finish on it, the SG specials, they just cost like nothing these days, and they're so good.
Yeah, they are great. They're a little, again, just like a touch modern. I'd have to do quite a lot to it. Like, I'd have to get some proper chrome pickups in there. I'd have to teak up the whole body to bring it up to a gloss.
But that's going to be the same for any of the Melody Makers you go for, the reissues, because they're all exactly that same finish.
Yeah, but the Melody Makers always were that finish, so it's fine.
Well, like, not really. No, original Melody Makers are, you know, proper, like, full nitro finishes.
Yeah, I guess so. They're just, yeah, the old ones you see are always, you know, so worn down that they're almost a sand. But yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe I guess there's work to be done on any of these things. I will have to think about it. Mark, you want to talk about Lemmy?
I do, indeed, because the Lemmy documentary has found its way to Netflix, and I hadn't seen it yet. I don't know if it was a Netflix production, but it's certainly a few years old. And because I'm sort of in quarantine now, I haven't got any access to any new guitar gear at the moment. I haven't even got an amp plugged in at the moment because we've had to make room in the living room for another desk so we can both work from home and stuff. So I haven't got an amp set up. I'm kind of playing the Dan Electro a lot, which I mentioned last week. But what it means is, in the absence of like playing any new stuff or trying any new gear, I'm just watching loads of music documentaries. And last night we watched the Lemmy documentary, which I haven't seen before. Like I said, I don't think it's a Netflix production, but it's just come on Netflix. And it's absolutely amazing. What a great movie about someone who, you know, I know a little bit about him, but it really is a good kind of peek inside the life of Lemmy. And what comes across most is that, like, the thing that he's into is the music, and he seems very free of any kind of like normal rock star nonsense, and that was quite refreshing for me. And also, obviously, the gear is amazing. You know, the Rickenbacker bass he's using, the Marshalls that he's using, pretty much throughout he's using the signature, the Rickenbacker signature, which is the
carved one.
Yeah, the 4004LK, is it? Yeah, 4004LK.
Friend of the podcast, JD Short, used to make those when he worked at Rickenbacker.
Really? Interesting. Yeah. Because so as far as I understand, there was only 60 made. And yeah, they've got that carved walnut top, which has got oak leaves kind of hand carved into it. So I don't know if JD was doing that, and he might be able to. Oh, I'm probably getting some of this wrong, and he'll probably correct us on this. But
I don't think they were that limited. I thought that they only made a very small number per year, but I don't didn't. I mean, I suppose
from everything that I'm seeing, yeah, there's only 60 available. And whether there was like a different version or something, but yeah, this one, which everyone refers to as the Lemmy signature, the 4004LK, are saying that there's 60 made, and I've seen that in a couple of different places. So tend to believe that, but. Yeah, I mean, and then obviously pairing up with the Marshall, which was, I think, another limited edition from what?
Yeah, from what? I was just having a look. It was, had a signature, it was Marshall Lemmy 1992 LEM Super Bass Head with a 4x15 cabinet and a 4x12 cabinet. So if you wanted the complete stack, it would set you back $8,700.
Wow.
The head alone was 4,200. I don't know what they limit it to in terms of production numbers.
So from what I remember, they didn't, basically, but they weren't making any as a standard thing. You had to like order it. So I remember at GAC, we ordered one for a customer and he had to wait, I think it was something like 8 or 12 weeks, something like that, because they were made to order. So yeah, in terms of them like knocking around, probably the people that ordered them and got them probably haven't sold them. So yeah, I mean, I can't remember the last time I saw one like on the market just floating around, but yeah, I mean, I would highly recommend everyone go and watch the doc, because you know, he comes across as just a pretty nice down-to-earth bloke who's sort of really just in it because he loves doing the music, and you know, obviously he likes to have a drink and knock about and all that. But yeah, it's really just like they've just ground out the albums over the years because that's their job. You know, they're one of those bands. We sort of talked about it a few weeks ago after I watched the Manic Street Preachers documentary. Talked about it when I think we'd watched the Rush documentary. And obviously, you know, those guys, personality-wise, very different to Lemmy. But I think the thing that's sort of consistent over a lot of these music docs that I'm watching is like, the people who are making this music see it as a job. Same with the Tom Petty one as well. Like, if you haven't watched the Tom Petty documentary, you should do that. It's like 5 hours long or something. But the thing that comes across with all of them is these people take this as like, this is their job. They go to their job and they do music and that is what it is. I think there's less sort of romanticism about the artistry of it all. It's just like, yeah, we haven't done an album for 2 years, which means we can't do a tour. So we got to do an album. So we do that and then we do the tour and then that lasts for 2 years and then we do another album. And I'm sort of into that in a way. I quite like this, you know, not like waiting 10 years between albums or anything like that. It's like, this is your job. Just grind them out. I like
the
it.
The functionality of it. Yeah, it's wonderful.
On a similar note, I don't know if you've seen the Connie Plank documentary, which it's on Amazon. So Connie Plank was a German record producer, and he did like a bunch of the Kraftwerk records. He did the first Eurythmics record. He did a bunch of stuff for Ultravox, basically like kind of weird synth sort of pop kraut rock crossover bands, I guess, to a degree. And it's like so interesting. It's so interesting. It's run by, it's hosted by Connie Plank's son, and he basically is just going around talking to all these people who his dad recorded. And he also did like the Scorpions. So there's like Rudolf Schenker is in the documentary, and they're all like, oh yes, I remember you. His name, I can't remember the kid's name, Stephen maybe. But they're just like, oh yes, I remember you when you were 8 years old and you were running around this farm naked. And he's like, yeah, great, thanks for that. But like it's really interesting. And like Connie Plank's ethic was very similar, and it starts by talking about all the stuff that he did, and then it kind of veers off into the kind of family impact that had, the fact that he was working, you know, 7 days a week, 20 hours a week or 20 hours a day. And you know, you kind of get a bit of that, and it's really good. It's like really, really interesting. And he only worked with people that he cared about. So they talk about the fact that he was offered loads of money to do a record for U2, and he was just like, nah, I'm just not interested. I just want to do, there's this another weird band from Cologne wants to do a record, so I'm going to do something with them instead. So
oh, that's awesome.
It's really worth a watch, though. It's really good.
Another documentary recommendation, just while I don't know what reminded what you were saying reminded me of it, Jay, but if people haven't seen the Bouncing Souls documentary, the last time I checked, it was all up on YouTube to watch. I think it's called... I can't remember now. It's subtitled 15 Years of the Bouncing Souls. Covers like the first 15 years of the Bouncing Souls.
I was going to say, that must be like 20 years old then.
Yeah, I think it came out in 2005 or something. So, but I mean, as with any band, like the interesting bit is like the first bit. So yeah, do check that out. Like I said, last time I checked, it was up on YouTube and definitely worth a watch because that's an interesting band. And if you're into bands with like work ethic, then that's one to watch.
And we actually put out a YouTube video this week as well, for the first time in a while. We did a video on top five modern classics. Yes.
Go on.
Yes, we did.
Nothing to say about. What's the feedback been like? I saw some people upset with your choices.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, exactly. Of course, you know, people
it's
are going to be.
Everyone's upset.
Yeah, yeah, everyone's upset. That's YouTube. But I think the choices were pretty and quite deliberately on my part a little contentious. But I was trying to think of what guitars, you know, I think might be able to stand the test of time and people might remember, you know, 50 years on from now would become standard. So did you guys see what I picked?
Absolutely not.
No.
Yeah, I watched it.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
I did watch it.
I just didn't want to give you the satisfaction of
saying
that.
Yeah,
I know. I thought it was really good. And I thought it was really funny how, if you don't mind me kind of spoiling it a little bit, Joe, the fact that you picked two guitars that were kind of influenced by Super Strats or whatever, and you highlight the fact that it's, you know, you're saying in there, look, I do appreciate the fact that I've chosen two guitars that are kind of are a bit similar and are essentially Super Strats, but this is why I think they're interesting. And people still went, oh, I can't believe you just chose two Super Strats. You know, just completely ignoring what you actually said.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, that's the inevitability of YouTube, I guess. But yeah, it was interesting trying to pick things that I think will stand the test of time. I won't give the ending away. I guess, can we give the ending away?
No, people have to go and watch it. Okay, think about the numbers.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Then we get them for a podcast listen and we get them for a YouTube watch.
Right, okay, got it. Well, listener, I don't know why I brought this up because I'm not going to tell you any more about it, but you should watch the video. It'll be quite fun. Anyway, we should. Should we do some news or should we
do
some questions? We got like 10, 15, well, 15, 20, something like that.
Why don't we do? Wait, let me have a look at the questions. Is there any there, or is it all guff?
I mean, there's some cool news as well. Should we just go straight into?
Let's do the questions.
Let's go questions. Okay. Yeah.
All right.
We'll do the news next week. We'll have a little bumper news week next week.
Bumper news week next week, because I can hear the dulcet tones of the question duck ushering in the fact that we are now into the question segment of the podcast. First up.
Did you see, before you jump in, did you see the bit of feedback that someone left us about the question duck?
Was it me? And did it say, I hate the question duck?
No, it wasn't that. It may well be. That may well be the case. I've never listened to any of these episodes, so I don't know what the question duck sounds like. But I did see someone say that they're disappointed that the question duck does not. There's no mastering that went on. You don't pan the duck from left to right. So I think that's something you should think about
that's
doing.
That's a good idea.
Someone wants a more realistic VR duck experience.
Yeah, okay. Right. I actually did hard pan the duck to the left.
I get that, but no, I think you should, if you're going to pan it at all, it should be
you want
should
some
go
sort
across.
Of binaural duck experience.
Yeah, binaural. Yeah? So I want a real binaural ducking. Yeah.
Okay, fine. I can give you a binaural ducking.
Thanks.
This week, the listeners will have just heard. You've just had a good binaural duck. Anyway, let's do some questions. Eric Scott says, what is your guilty pleasure guitar? The one no one would think that you would like. Eric himself is a diehard Ibanez fanatic, but he's a sucker for a nice telly. So yeah, I guess Matthew Knight as I don't know what is Matthew Knight's taste. You're relatively broad. You're pretty open. I'm not sure you could have a guilty pleasure. You're just such a broad.
I have definitely got one. Because I think all of you guys will hate it, but the one guitar that I would absolutely love is the vintage. I say vintage, it's not, well, I guess maybe it isn't, he 30 years old, the early 90s John Petrucci Picasso.
I don't even know what that is.
Do you not remember they did the, so before John Petrucci joined Music Man, he had a run of Ibanez guitars, and they came in very fancy finishes, and one of them was the Picasso, which was just some multicolored faces on a guitar. In fact, an Ibanez RG550, I'd love an original RG550. They go for crazy money now.
Didn't you own an RG550 for a while?
I owned a very, very destroyed Ibanez RG550, an original one.
That's right.
Where none of the pickups were original. It basically didn't work in any sense. I think it was, it was totally gone. And I can't remember now. I think the neck had been filed down even thinner than it already was. And I was just like, I bought it for like next to no money. And then was just like, if I'm going to own one, I just want to own a good one. I'd love an, I mean, they came in amazing colors, obviously. They play amazingly. They're great playing guitars, even though I'm not that kind of player. For me, an original Ibanez RG550, but I would love one of the Ibanez John Petrucci. They came in, there was Picasso. I'm going to try and have a look now.
There were three colours, weren't there? There was a black and white, there was a pink, blue and orange, and there was a red, green and blue.
But they I think they did some other finishes. 1995 they came out, the JPM 100, according to the Ibanez wiki page. They go for ridiculous amounts of money. I think the last time I saw one secondhand in PMT Birmingham, I think they wanted $5,000 for it.
Oh my goodness.
So I was like, probably won't get one of those. But just looking here at some of the other models, there was a JPM 90 Ham. I don't know what the Ham standard for. I really
just,
hope
just a Ham. Just the Ham. The whole front of it covered in sheets of Billy Bear Ham.
It's really disappointing. There's no Ham involved whatsoever.
Was it heavy actual metal? And it was just like heavy metal. It was made of heavy metal.
I think it's like a it's like a maple top, smoked bacon maple top. it's ridiculous because they've got, I mean, there's got to be some people out, I'm sure there's someone out there, ultimate John Petrucci fan, who's just got, because obviously Ernie Ball do the Ball Family Reserve, like limited edition Music Man guitars. And there's probably someone out there who's got all of those and all of the Ibanez, because it looks like there was a lot of different Ibanez signatures as well. Ridiculous. But yeah, for me, JPM 100.
Okay, very cool. Very cool indeed. Mark Packham?
Well, I mean, Matt's stolen my thunder because I was going to say Ibanez RG550 as well.
Really? Basically, that's okay. We can have the same one.
Well, basically, anything that is kind of more metal focused, I would suggest, with like that finish maple neck, that kind of weird... It's hard to describe how Ibanez necks are finished. They're oiled in a way that they sort of feel... I don't know, they've got this like powdery finish to them that makes them just feel so nice. And I think the RG550... Because that was like the first one with a maple neck. Is that right, Matt? Or it's like, it's basically the classic one with a maple neck.
Yes.
Maple board, you know what I mean?
I think it's the classic model with maple neck. Yeah.
Yeah. That was going to be my pick because I just love how they age. And actually, Joe, when we, I don't think it's come out yet, but we did a an interview with Ben from Jodo Guitars, and he talked about how he tried to recreate that on his arcade caster or whatever it was called, create that kind of Ibanez super stratty oiled neck. So that would be my pick, really, RG550. But I'll tell you the other things I also like from Ibanez. Obviously, the Talman guitars I really like, but I kind of don't feel that's too
far out of
our...
It's not a guilty pleasure, really.
No, definitely not, because it's basically like a kind of weird stretched out telly at the end of the day, I suppose. But the other thing that I would say is I really like some of the Ibanez like pointier shapes, things like the Iceman and the Destroyer. And I actually think the best one out of all of those is the Fireman, the Paul Gilbert signature. I really like the body shape of the Fireman. And I really like the sound of the first one, which was the one that had the three single coils. And Paul Gilbert did actually a really good video at the time when that model first came out about, like, you can get, as long as you've got some sort of kind of noise cancelling going on, you can get some really good metal sounds out of, like, Strat single coils. And worth digging out that video, because some of the sounds that he gets off that guitar with the single coils but using, like, loads and loads of gain, it sounds awesome. And that guitar just sounds massive, and it is kind of just a big sort of guitar in general. I guess that would be my choice really for this, like the Ibanez Fireman.
I was going to say, actually, talking of Paul Gilbert, it's worth mentioning, obviously, recently on Instagram, he's been playing his original Racer X pink guitar. And I can't remember what the model was, but there's basically, he plays this like neon pink Ibanez, and I think it must have been a signature from them, but that guitar is absolutely amazing. I agree with you, Mark. Those Ibanez, definitely. I really want one now.
That Racer X guitar is like before they were doing RGs, right? It was like halfway between something like, you know, like the Musician or the Roadsters and the RGs, I think.
Because this would have been like mid-80s, I guess, wasn't it? At that point, Racer X, mid-80s?
I think they were like a bit later than that, actually. Oh, wait, are you talking about the Strat, sort of Super Strat style, or he's got a Fireman in that colour as well?
It's, hold on, I've just found it here. It looks like it's got a Fireman lower horn, but then it looks like an Explorer.
Yeah, that's a different guitar. The picture I'm looking at when he's in Racer X, he's got... yeah, just like something that looks halfway between like an RG and a Roadster or something like that. But yeah, this...
yeah, I think that was one of the early ones. But yeah, he played like a half Explorer, half Fireman sort of thing at one point. He also, according to his wiki page or the Racer X wiki page, he at one point played a modded Epiphone Wiltshire in pink.
Nice. In fact, I'm looking
at him. He is the best. He is the best. Honestly, he is the best of all the shredders, Paul Gilbert. He's hilarious.
I think I'm looking at it right now. And it's got like a Floyd fitted and like two humbuckers and stuff. Yeah, it looks amazing.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. That is pretty ridiculous. J Cross, guilty pleasure. We're all going to be going for sort of metal guitars, I imagine, as our guilty pleasure, as those are the type of instruments that we don't like.
I don't know, really, to be honest with you, because I kind of like what I like, which is... like Tellys and Les Pauls, and I guess some like weird offset stuff. Like I really like the... I don't think it counts as a guilty pleasure, but you know, the Yamaha SGVs, I absolutely love.
I don't think that counts as a guilty pleasure. They're still kind of within your style. I thought you were probably going to say the Washburn Solo or something
maybe.
I wasn't sure. Was there nothing like at GAC when we used to be able to try out anything? Was there not like a guitar that you were definitely like, this is not something I'm into, but this actually feels and sounds great?
No, not really.
That's good. That's
but
fine.
Like,
that,
you know,
that means you're true to yourself. That's
I guess
good.
So. I just, you know, kind of super strats and, you know, point. I guess I tell you what, actually, probably the closest thing would be a BC Rich Warlock.
What?
Is Go that on. The Why? One that I'm thinking? No, no, not the Warlock. The... What BC Rich am I thinking of? The one that Slash play? Is that Bitch?
Yeah, I think so.
No, not that. What is that other BC Rich?
I'm going to find it because they only basically do those guitars.
Is it the Mockingbird?
Now.
Mockingbird, yeah, Mockingbird. B.C. Rich Mockingbird, that is the answer to this question. And we've talked about this before, I would happily have one if I could get one in, like, somewhat of a regular-looking finish. The problem is that they're all either bonkers flames, horrible black or pearlescent white, like loads of weird switches and stuff. If I could get a Mockingbird Junior, I'd be all about that.
Well, the thing is,
a Mockingbird Junior in black or in natural or like a 70s walnut Mockingbird like single humbucker. Lovely.
They do that. Well, they do the natural one as part of the... I'm just on their website now. They do that as part of the legacy range, but they are very true to the original guitar. So yeah, they've got volume... I think it's volume... then a toggle switch, then another volume and tone. But they've also got three micro switches and a sort of chicken head knob on there as well.
That's the problem here. You've lost me.
Let's have a look. Pick up an electronics. Control out. Two volumes, one tone, one three-way toggle, individual mini switches for pickup, coil tap and reverse phase, and one five-position varitone filter. And obviously they've got a Floyd as well, so that's probably not up your street.
No. See, what I want is a Mockingbird... but just a single humbucker and a volume and tone, and that's it. That's what I want. Like, I quite like the headstock, the mad BC Rich headstock. I quite like that. I do especially like the older one, the one that looks, you know, a bit like a what's the word I would use? So it looks a bit like an open book. Let's leave it at that. And I think they're cool. There's too much going on with them. And it's certainly any of those horrible ones that look like swimming pools, like that's absolutely not for me. But yeah, if I could get like a regular looking one, I'd be all about that.
Annoyingly, they do pretty much the thing that you're after, which is the 50th anniversary Mockingbird natural transparent. So regular headstock with the big R logo, like the old school logo.
That's cool. Sounds good.
It's got, I mean, the top is a bit figured, but it is basically natural.
Yeah.
Two humbuckers with a stop tail, like wraparound stop tail.
Fantastic.
Two volumes in a tone with a three-way toggle. All good. The only thing is 12th, 13th, 11th, 10th and 14th fret has a 50th anniversary logo that spans the entirety of those frets.
Joe, I'm just putting it out there. Next video, top five Paul Gilbert guitars. At one point in Japan in 1996, he was like, you know what? I love the Beatles, so I'm going to make a Paul McCartney-influenced Beatle bass Ibanez with Super Destroyers in it. So it's a Hofner body with a weird short Ibanez headstock. He's had some mad guitars. Ice Stroyer was the model that I was thinking of from the 80s, by the way.
I believe he's in a Beatles covers band, isn't he? With a bunch of the guys from Dream Theater. Let me just find the name.
That sounds brilliant.
Hang on, I can't remember what they're called now. One second. They are called Yellow Matter Custard. Yellow Matter Custard is a Beatles tribute supergroup.
They're called what?
Yellow Matter Custard, which is a line from
I Am the Walrus.
Yellow Matter Custard is a Beatles tribute supergroup consisting of Mike Portnoy, Neil Morse, Paul Gilbert and Matt Bissonette.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's intense.
Sounds great. I want to watch those.
They've got two releases called... the first one's called One Night in New York City. Second one's called One More Night in New York City.
Oh, that is fantastic. But yeah, he does have a great range of guitars. I would find it very difficult to answer this question because I kind of like everything. I'm not sure there's anything that I don't like. You know, I like modern stuff and I like traditional stuff. I tell you what, the only thing that does spring to mind is the only place where I do put limitations on myself is for like basses to play in polybath, because, you know, I always want to play classic looking instruments, despite the fact that I love, you know, things like, you know, headless status basses and stuff like that. We do try and sort of play vintage style gear. But I sometimes find myself in the quandary where I'm like, I really would like a Spectre Euro, because they just felt absolutely incredible to play. Do you remember we had a Doug Wimbish one in GAC for years, and I absolutely loved that. I loved that bass. It was because it was about, I think we had it for quite a long time in stock, because it was about like $2,500-$3,000, something like that, and it didn't come with a case for some reason.
I mean, it was orange, which, you know, apart from me, no one really likes orange basses, so
yeah, it was a bit weird, but it sounded incredible. I just love those Spectre Euros, like they're just so bright and zingy. The PJ pickups, the brass nut, just this lovely sort of long gloss neck. They're just so cool. They really are very cool, but they're just, you know, maybe just a touch too 80s for me, being able to get away with. And they're an investment as well, because, you know, you can get just a regular Euro. You don't have to get the Wimbish signature, and you can get those. You can get them in some tasteful colors, some simple blacks or something like that. But they are like $2,000, so it's a big investment for something that I wouldn't be 100% on board with the look. But yeah. Absolutely incredible sounding guitars. Now, boys, that pretty much brings us up to the
so just
end.
Just to confirm, we answered one question there, right?
I mean, I never claimed that this would be a question special.
Good. Just double checking for, you know, just wanted to double check.
Well, we've got, you know, there's always next week, so yeah.
Fingers crossed.
Dangle that carrot over the listeners again.
Do you want to hear us answer one more question? Tune in next week.
Yes.
Might be talking about some news.
Yeah, we're going to try and talk about some news. But we are going to be continuing it anyway over on the Patreon version of this podcast on patreon.com/guitar nerds, where we are continuing our Gear of the Decade podcast series. So, you know, tune in over there to hear us trying to decide upon. There's only a couple more episodes left. We're going to be deciding.
I've forgotten where we are. Have we announced that the DL4 one? We just decided that the DL4 one, we announced that,
DL4 is absolutely not from last decade.
Yeah. It was so good. We've given it an honorary award.
We carried it over.
Now, to become a Patreon supporter, it costs only $1 a month, and you can enjoy the podcast ad-free and early every week. Or at the $5 tier, you can enjoy an entire extra episode every week, plus you get access to our entire back catalogue. And at the $10 tier, you can become an executive producer, enjoy all those benefits, plus you get the prestigious honour of having your name sung in our podcast song. Yes, there you go. You can follow us on all the major social platforms with @GuitarNerds. Join us on the Facebook at facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum. We'll be back next week with more of this guitar nerdery. Farewell.
Cheers, gang.
Take it easy.
It's me, Joe, and you're to see you at home.
Oh, really? I told
you. She's going to sing it for you. It's going to be really nice. Here you go.
Joe Harper and Schultze, Michael Howe, Brian Hansen, Jeffrey Wright.
Robin Smith, oh, colors match up right.
Chlorella Cambadune.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.